everyone. Welcome to the Agile Entrepreneur Podcast. This is your host, Ramesh Danta. This podcast is about starting and building your own business with purpose, passion, perseverance, and possibilities. Today, we have an exciting guest who has been at freelancing for quite some time. So I'm very happy to introduce Steve Folland. Steve is a video and audio producer from the UK, building his business to work around looking after his kids. He's also behind long-running Being Freelancer, the podcast, vlog, and community, where freelancers from around the world share experiences, support, laughs, and cookies. Most recently, he's launched the Doing It for the Kids podcast for freelancing parents. Hi, Steve. Welcome.
Ramesh, thank you so much for having me.
So how do you guys share cookies while you're remotely podcasting?
Well, that's the best bit. You share them, but equally you can't lose any. Like you still get to eat them all to yourself. But no, do you know one thing that we do is every Friday in the Being Freelance Facebook group, I do the Non-Employee of the Week Awards live as a Facebook live. So people come and join all at the same time. And then I chat for a bit, and then we basically celebrate one of the freelance community from that week, you know, saying what they've been doing great. Sometimes they've been going for a rough patch, whatever it might be. But part of the main prize is a box of cookies or biscuits, as we call them. So yes, yeah, so they've been they get posted out, they get a mug, and then everybody just sits there eating biscuits.
It's excellent.
I don't know. Maybe it's a very British thing. We love our tea and our biscuits in this country.
Oh yeah,
our tea and our cookies. So yes, but I've ended up sending these cookies to the States, to Canada, to Australia, to Brazil. So yeah, word's getting out.
Excellent. Maybe I'll receive them one of these days. So Steve, how did you build these podcast communities, and when did you start building them?
It must be nearly 5 years ago now. So basically, I went freelance. I worked in radio for years, for about 10 or 12 years, and then decided to go freelance, as you say, to look up, you know, to be flexible around my family. And after about a year of trying to figure out how to be successful at being a freelancer, I found myself like listening to podcasts, but none of them, you know, they might be speaking to entrepreneurs, but they weren't necessarily speaking directly to solo freelancers. There's a crossover, but there's a difference. And so since I couldn't find a podcast I wanted to listen to, I decided to start it. So I just basically each week I speak to a different freelancer from around the world. And it's not about the job that they do, but it's about the being freelance. So about how they find clients, how they deal with the work-life balance and the finances and collaboration, side projects. And yeah, so that's how it started. I wanted to listen to it and I couldn't find it to listen to.
When you switched from whatever you were doing 5 years ago or so to be a freelancer, what were you trying to freelance in?
So I started doing video and audio production, and I started doing it on the side of my full-time radio job. I started doing things like script writing or video presenting for people. And then people would come to me and say, can you present this video? And then I would say, well, I can, but I can also edit it, because I was trained in that years ago. And this was just at the crossover point where people started using video online much more. And so there was this need, and the technology was such that we could edit at home and not need to be in offices and things like that. So I was doing it on the side, and I just started getting more and more freelance work on the side of my normal job, until maybe I'd be up and, you know, only getting a few hours sleep a night. And clearly that had to stop. But also clearly there was kind of a need there. There was a need for people who could write scripts, do voiceovers, edit videos, and create storytelling in that way. So I decided to go for it. As soon as our son was about to start school and we had our second kid and we needed people, you know, we thought, maybe I can work from home. Maybe I can make this work.
Okay, excellent. So Steve, you already talked about the motivation for you to freelance. And one other motivation I keep hearing from freelancers is a freedom. It's you wanted flexibility, but people also are looking, you know, they said freedom. But the unspoken truth is that freelancers are probably working a lot longer than if they're employed. So what was your experience freelancing, what you were looking and what you got out of it?
Yeah, you're right. You can end up working a lot, but at least you're in control of it. And what I quite like about it is that if I'm busting my gut and working really hard, at least I tend, if I'm doing it right, to be financially rewarded for that. And also creatively rewarded for it, because I tend to work with lots of different clients on lots of different things at once. So yeah, it was freedom for me, but it was creative freedom to work on lots of different things with different people. But also that financial freedom, not in a way that suggests I'm going to retire in 2 years' time, but in order to set my own levels and to reward myself as I want to. Whereas, you know, if you work for a company, you can really work incredibly hard and maybe not even get a thank you, let alone a raise. That wasn't why I went freelance, but it was a nice side effect.
Correct. So one of the things about this show is that we want to reduce the fear of starting a business, right? So a lot of people, they want to start a business, but there's a fear of uncertainty, fear of unknown kind of stuff. So for you, when you started this as a side hustle, right? You were working full-time and then you're working. But when you did a complete switch, I mean, how did you manage the fear?
I don't really think I had the fear as such. I always just felt that if it didn't work out, I could go back and get a proper job, in quotation marks. You know, I knew I had the skills, I had lots of experience, and so ultimately I could go and get another job. But it was more like a determination to make it work. There's nothing like having two kids and a mortgage and so on and so forth to just make you really get your head down and work. So I'd be sending out cold emails and like building relationships, and gradually things started to pick up. So I don't think there was ever a fear as such for me. Maybe it was just blind naivety. But like I say, I had been doing it on the side. I did feel like there was a need for it. And so I just knew if I kept looking and kept doing good work, then things would pick up.
Okay, so good. So you started the side hustle and at some point you made the switch over. Afterwards, you also picked up podcasting. And nowadays, I'm seeing a lot of training courses. Hey, do your own podcasting, start your own podcasting. It's really picking up. So I wanted to ask you, when you started the podcasting, how was your learning experience? Did you have to go to a coaching class, a training course? How did you do the podcast?
Well, you see, so I had a head start in that I worked in radio for years.
Yeah.
And so I even already had a microphone because I was doing voiceovers as part of my freelance job. So I had the microphone, I had the laptop, I knew how to edit audio. You know, other people were paying me to do it already. So I was already there. In fact, for the radio station I worked for, we already made podcasts. So I even had an idea of, you know, adding the metadata and adding the titles and all of that. We've been doing it for years already. So I didn't need coaching as such. I kind of knew how I wanted it to sound. I knew how to interview people. I've been doing it for years. So I'm probably very different in that respect to a lot of people who need a hand. And sometimes now I help people launch their podcasts, or they, you know, I don't do a course. I don't offer a course, but I do offer help. And I get that. I think a lot of it is to do with confidence, but there's the technical side of it as well. And I had an unfair advantage in that respect.
Excellent, excellent. And let me tell you about my own motivation for doing the podcast, and I want to understand your motivation. One is that it's a content generator, because by talking to people, there's a lot of content that gets generated that can be used for blogs. It can be repurposed in many different ways. That's one piece of it. The other more important one is the networking, the connection to the people, right? Talking to people, we mutually learn from each other. Oh, that is really, really important. And then in the long term, it could be monetarily, you know, it could be monetized in terms of sponsorships and other things like that. I mean, right now we are not at that stage. I wanted to understand your motivation. Why did you start podcast, and why do you continue a podcast?
Well, so the funny thing is, I think I really did start it to learn. I started it from a place of wanting to talk to other freelancers. I didn't know any other freelancers. There weren't meetups. There weren't co-work spaces. I was just reaching out to some people that I've met on Twitter and then interviewing them. So I wanted to learn. And also it felt, and I hear this a lot from the audience, like you feel, it can feel really quite isolating, especially if you work from home. So it feels less isolating to know that people all around the world as well, not just in your country, have a very similar story, very similar feelings, and they're all trying to figure it out. So there is a lot more stuff out there now for freelancers than there was 5 years ago, even a couple of years ago. I started it for that reason. Now, you're absolutely right, though, that I have now, of course, I've nearly interviewed about 200 people. So I've met all of those people effectively, had all of those conversations. But also, you're also networking away with your audience because they are feeling like they know you. And so even though I don't create a podcast in order to get work, that's an excellent reason to get to do one. Mm-hmm. But that's not why I did it. It's more, I guess, philanthropic than that, really. It's just to help people and to help myself. But yes, you know, people do, I guess my profile has raised. And so people see that I'm a much more visible, put it that way, or the work that I might get from my video and audio work. And also, it shows to people, even if they're not going to hire me for making this podcast, if they want me to create video stuff for them, they're looking at my website. They can see that I have been consistently putting this out for, say, 5 years, and that it sounds of a certain standard and that it's obviously popular. Like, all of those things are ticks, I think, if you're a sort of independent creator. So in that respect, that's been great. And really, it's only been in the past year where I realized, actually, I've got a large enough audience now, and it's a niche enough audience, mm-hmm. that I can sell it. I can make money out of it because I can clearly appeal to advertisers who are trying to target freelancers with a service that I believe in that helps a freelancer. So when it comes to podcasting, if you've got a niche audience, that actually is a benefit, mm-hmm. when it comes to monetizing it in that way, because you don't need tens of thousands of listeners, hundreds of thousands of listeners, in order to actually be really effective for advertising for a niche product. So yeah, so actually now I do have sponsorship on the podcast. So in theory, yeah, it pays its way. But mm-hmm. definitely, I put way more hours into producing it out of the love of it, passion for it, than I do. But, you know, I could definitely make more money doing my video and audio stuff than doing the podcast. But it fulfills me creatively and also socially, since meeting all of the people I've met and the audience as well.
Actually, excellent reasons. And I feel the same way. The people that I interviewed so far, about 50 of them, I mean, I feel connected to them. I feel when I send out an email to them, I much better response, pretty much close to 100% respond. So a lot higher quality connection than a cold email.
Yeah, and definitely. And, you know, and your audience will be getting to know you as well. Like, for anybody who starts a podcast, it's a really close relationship. In a way, even more so than video, because you're right in their ears. You tend to have their attention. And it's amazing. You know, that used to be something that only people on the radio or in films or TV or whatever used to be able to do. And now there's nothing stopping any of us doing it.
So, Steve, let me switch topics a little bit. You've interviewed about 200 plus freelancers. So if I could ask you a few questions about the freelancing industry, if somebody wants to go into freelancing, maybe it will help them, right? So what characteristics have you seen across the board that made some of these freelancers successful, more successful than others who are not?
Cool, crikey. I think you obviously need to have the skills.
Okay.
You need good at what you do. Mm-hmm. And with that, some self-confidence as well, because you are doing everything. Therefore, you have to do the selling of your skills to some extent. You need to be organized to stay mm-hmm. on top of your time. You need to be, I think, self-aware so that you can develop yourself. You can see what's working, what isn't working, and sort of improve like your work-life balance and your actual professional skills as well. What else do you need? I think having people around you helps mm-hmm. as well. So not feeling like you're just going to do it all yourself, looking for collaboration or just looking for support in other people, be it online or in real life. And then there is the entrepreneurial side. Like I said earlier, like, I think every freelancer has an entrepreneur inside them. Like, they mm-hmm. have to, in order to realize that they're services are worth selling. But then others take it up a gear. Maybe they start to productize their services. So they're literally creating packages. Yeah. Or maybe, and you, I see this a lot, you know, people are starting to create actual digital products or physical products in the case of illustrators and designers.
Correct.
Or maybe they're creating apps. And then on top of that, stuff like courses and communities. So they're realizing that, yeah, they can sit back and wait for other people to pay their bills by offering them work, but also they can create another revenue stream and be in charge of that themselves. And actually, I think that's in there, mixed in there is a key thing, is that having, I think if you want to be successful long-term, you, it helps if you have multiple revenue streams.
Yeah.
That all of your eggs aren't in one basket, and that if certain things die off slightly, you can pick up others. But definitely, the more, you don't have to be an entrepreneur, you don't have to call yourself an entrepreneur, but the ones who take it up a gear certainly have that element in them that lets them see opportunities and start embracing the business side of it. And in fact, some of the people I've spoken to have taken it further and bought on employees and created agencies or production houses and ended up effectively not being freelancers, but going further. And then some of them decide they don't like that. They don't like managing people. They've got too far away from the creative side. Mm-hmm. And so they strip it back down again. Because that's the great thing, is that at the core of it, you're still a freelancer. You still have your skills. You can just retreat back into that. Myself, I have grown my business by bringing on other freelancers to work with me. So I'm selling more than just my skills. And so there's having your eyes open to those opportunities, listening to your clients or potential clients and seeing ways that you can help them and being helpful and nice. Like these are all things I think that can help you have a successful career as a freelancer.
Excellent segment, Steve. Thank you very much for that, those insights. So a couple of other areas we typically have discussion on our podcast is what I call the first paying customers. For any business person, entrepreneur, when they're starting out, the biggest fear is how do they get the first paying customer, right? Once you get the first paying customer, the anxiety levels go down, and then hopefully you can get a referral or a testimonial from them that will lead to a second paying customer. So what do you advise these freelancers who are starting on their own? I mean, what are the different strategies that you give them or tell them that they should go after to get the first paying customers?
I think one of the key things to begin with is to think about the people you already know. So that might be friends and family. So like tell your people. When you're a freelancer, you have to go out there and make opportunities. So tell people, because I think we even neglect, like, even our brothers, sisters, cousins, parents, like, they're not just solo people. They know, they have connections all over that you won't even be aware of. So you have to let people know what it is. And actually, even telling them what it is can be quite useful, because it forces you to think about what it is that you actually do. I guess your elevator pitch, you know, forces you to be able to vocalize it. And then also the people that you used to work for, like loads of the guests of the Being Freelance podcast have found their first clients through either being hired by the company that they used to work for, or from people who were within that company who have since moved on. So there's that key thing of not burning your bridges, I guess. Then quite a lot of people give freelance job sites a chance. And, you know, some of those have better reputations than others. So I won't go into listing them. But certainly, here's the thing with those sites. In theory, there are clients approaching those sites with a job they want doing and money ready to pay it. And so actually, if you can put forward a good pitch and not sell yourself short, then it is a good way to get started, because you can start to build your portfolio and maybe your confidence. And lots of people will say they're a race to the bottom. And I would say that you should always just remember that you don't have to work for anybody you don't want to, and not for a price that you don't want to. But I know lots of freelancers who have had a lot of success on those sites. Social media is really powerful. It's a great way not just to, I guess, broadcast what you do, you know, share your portfolios and stuff, but to connect with people, to connect with other freelancers, because you have to realize they're not like the competition. Mm-hmm. So to connect with people, they might end up referring work to you. Also, to follow companies that you want to work with, you know, get to know people. Don't just pitch to them straight away, but just to, I guess, build up a connection so that one day when somebody, it's amazing how many people, for example, on Twitter or LinkedIn suddenly say, hey, I'm looking for this job. I'm looking for a graphic designer. And you'll say, oh, I'm a graphic designer. And say, oh, I'm aware of that person because I've seen their little avatar so many times. So actually, social media is a really useful one. And LinkedIn, it obviously depends where your potential clients are. Obviously, right. LinkedIn is a really useful one for lots of people. Then there's the way that, like I mentioned earlier, I sent out loads of cold emails and some of them have turned into extremely valuable long-term relationships.
So email is not dead, huh?
Definitely not. I think if you, so long as you pitch it right, you know, so long as you're researching who the person is and you've actually got a reason why you're contacting them and what you're offering them. Or, you know, lots of illustrators do this, for example, you send them something in the post that's going to get you standing out even more. I've even knocked on doors and I've spoken to people on the podcast who have knocked on doors and introduced themselves. I did that like years ago when I worked in radio. I went and knocked on the door of an independent production company in London. And it was so rare that anyone did that, that the managing director came out to see me. and I ended up doing work for them. And then I guess probably one of the biggest things is just meeting people.
Yeah.
Like getting out there, and it might be to networking events, be it more formal ones or more informal one, meetups, whatever works. Meeting people online, meeting people in person, going to conferences, and just not being shy, actually putting yourself forward. One of my guests said that you just have to keep meeting people. That was like, he was convinced that was the key to it. Keep meeting people. And the reason freelancing kind of gets easier as time goes on is just because you get to meet more people. So yeah, I reckon those are good places to start when you're first starting out.
Excellent. So let me switch gears a little bit and let's talk about Steve Fallon. So Steve, as a person, right? So who are you? What motivates you? What inspires you? What are your hobbies? Just talk about, you know, you, if you could.
Well, like I mentioned, it's my kids are what motivate me originally. Okay. But to a certain extent, they still do. And also, they, as far as hobbies go, they pretty much have sucked up all of that element of my time as well. So I'm definitely at this, but gladly, because they're at that stage, they are age 6 and 9, nearly 10. They're at that age where actually they still like me, pretty much, most of the time. So yeah, just being freelance, the podcast is so demanding and my work is so demanding and family time that actually the rest of it sort of just becomes hanging out with friends and stuff when you get the chance rather than a hobby. You know, I used to go salsa dancing, you know, in my 20s and I don't get to do that anymore. Recently though, I have started doing way more fitness, which was really linked to just getting older, frankly, and not wanting to have that dad belly.
Yeah.
And so just, I do realize that staying fit gives me more energy into my work. I'm really not like a gym type person, but I've been going. And because of our son has been learning tennis, and so I've been playing tennis against him, so I've started playing tennis. So yeah, it sounds terribly dull. I want to tell you something like I go skydiving and kite surfing. I don't. I barely even have time to watch TV and films and stuff like that. So it's not exciting.
Right. That's fine. A couple of things. Going back, looking at your own journey, any things that you think you should have done differently, but not in a regretful way, but things that would have improved in many aspects of what you are doing right now?
I always kind of think the only real regret or the only thing I would have done differently was years ago when I worked in radio. And I always had this thing that, you know, I wanted to be on like the biggest radio station in the UK, you know, like to be a really big presenter. I ended up on the breakfast show of this sort of commercial station just north of London. But it was relatively small, but I had so much control. I could play whatever I wanted. Like, you never get to do that. It was crazy. We had so much fun. And I just got comfortable. And I always thought that just because I was good at what I would do, eventually somebody at the big radio stations would notice.
I see.
And it was stupid. What I should have been doing was going out there and putting my demo out and making opportunities for myself. Like while I was sitting there at the end of the, I guess the street where the big radio stations were thinking they might notice me, Other people were knocking on the door of those buildings where the radio stations. Other people were climbing through the windows and noticed. And so it made me realize in hindsight that like being good isn't good enough. Like you actually have to push yourself forward and make opportunities if you want stuff to happen. And that was something that I then learned and has made me much better as a freelancer, because I realized that, you know, if I decide I quite fancy speaking at conferences like I did last year, that's not going to happen unless I start applying for conferences or I tell people about it and then they go, oh, actually, I know somebody who's organizing a meetup. How about you? Like, stuff doesn't happen unless you start taking positive steps to make it happen. And that I learned that by just getting comfortable and not pushing myself forward, and I'm not letting that happen again.
I mean, we can go back and do it. But I, as you were talking about that pushing, so one thought that came to my mind is my belief that anything, a product or service is only 30% of a business. The remaining 60 to 70% is marketing / promotion. And then, you know, so all those aspects. I agree with you. So last question, Steve. I mean, you talk to a bunch of people, 200 plus freelancers, and you have your own experiences. So what advice would you give to people who are aspiring entrepreneurs, but they're just waiting to see what they should do?
One thing is to stay close to your finances.
Okay.
Keep your overheads low. I reckon that translates nicely between freelancers and entrepreneurs of any sort. Also, especially as a freelancer, but you know, you get to define what your vision of success is as well. Mm. You know, it's wonderful that we live in this world where there are so many people sharing their experiences online that you can see people. But I think you have to be really careful about what are you actually aspiring to and why, what are you trying to achieve? And so just because somebody is living one certain lifestyle doesn't mean that is what you're after. So for me, like I know what I want, and I don't want to like hire a big office with lots of staff and stuff. I like the fact that I can stay really agile, bringing on freelancers and being there for my family and picking them up from school and stuff like that, you know? So I think be really clear about what your success, what you want to achieve is. And that can change over time. It's fine for that to change. So, yeah. And then I think just time and patience, like perseverance. Again, so many people feels like they're in a bit of a rush. And actually, there's something to be said for just consistently turning up and doing good work or putting out that podcast or that video, like being regular. And yes, you have to keep promoting it and pushing forward and telling people about stuff. But you can take a little bit longer, I think. Sometimes people are in a bit too much rush. And possibly that, you know, that crosses over into lots of different business fields as well. Sometimes companies grow way too quickly.
That's right.
They're just trying, you know, and they lose control of it. Whereas actually, I swear, there are a lot of freelancers in this world who are probably way more profitable than a lot of companies. I sometimes look at these massive companies which suddenly collapse.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you think, isn't that ridiculous? I am actually more profitable than that massive company. Because they're living on such small margins and they've grown so big out of greed that suddenly everything has collapsed underneath them, whereas actually I can adjust and be flexible. And so actually I'd rather be where I am. So just don't get dragged into what other people are doing and do what you want to do. It's cool to be inspired, but you don't have to be sucked in.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Steve, excellent discussion, conversation. Thank you very much. For people who are listening, for other excellent episodes like this, go to rameshdanta.com and go under the podcast. You will get it there. So, Steve, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. Really enjoyed that. Good luck with it all. Really appreciate it.